Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit Simplecast.com. Full Service Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. This is the Junctional Thinking Podcast, and I'm your host, Pierre Vigilance, and I am very, very happy to have you with me this afternoon. Over my career path, I have been able to sort of interact with patients in the clinical setting and then constituents and stakeholders in government, nonprofit, and then some consulting work. And in that journey, I've come to understand that health and health outcomes are a function of more than just what healthcare itself can offer. So if we put all the onus on healthcare, we are bound to continue to be floundering with respect to health and health outcomes. We need more diverse voices and different inputs in order to actually impact change in community health outcomes. And so that's why this show, with inputs from different sectors, is really important, I think. Voices from those different sectors, the people who are doing work in different spaces and places that impact health, come into this space and we talk about a few different things. We talk about careers, we talk about junctional thinking itself and the elements that are junctional thinking. And we also learn a bit about what some of the tools are that they use in order to be successful in their lives. So today's show is sort of a remix of an early show that we did in season one, where I had a couple of my guests who are here today and one who wasn't there but is here with us now, who are all out there in the world doing great things in the public health space. I'm going to let them introduce themselves, but I have to start off by saying I'm very thankful to all three of them for being here. I will blame each of them for different things during the course of the show, so you'll hear some blame being passed around there. And they know it's coming. Well, maybe they don't know it's coming. I don't know. Michael's looking at me like, what are you talking about?
I'm just going with it.
But anyway, so Bhakti Sehgal. Sorry. Do I talk? I've been saying Sehgal forever and a day.
It's Sehgal.
Sehgal. Mm-hmm. See? Okay. Greg Dwyer, Micah Early, thank you all very much for coming in to the show today. Just very briefly, could you introduce yourselves and tell us what you're doing and where you're doing it? And then we're going to dive into a conversation about some things that I know you're familiar about related to public health education stuff. So we'll start with you, Bhakti.
Okay. My name is Bhakti Sehgal. I graduated from GW School of Public Health in 2015, and I've bounced around a bit, and I'm one of those people that's really proud of having bounced around. And currently, I work at a research funder in DC, and working on a lot of projects related to systems improvement, getting machines, internal machines, to work the way that they should with regards to getting the best research out there. And I look forward to sharing more as we go on.
Thank you. Greg.
My name is Greg Dwyer. I am a research scientist in the Department of Health Policy and Management at the Milken Institute School of Public Health at George Washington University. That's my full title. It's a bit of a mouthful. I've not, unlike Bhakti, bounced around very much in my career. I've been at George Washington University this is my eighth year now. And that's actually how I met you. When I was getting my master's in public health. And right now, we do a lot of work in the health policy realm surrounding coverage analyses, expansion of coverage in Medicare and Medicaid, chronic disease prevention, HIV prevention, those sorts of things. Those are the activities that we're involved in. Very diverse portfolio, and I'm happy to speak about that more as well.
Excellent. Thank you. Micah.
Hi, so yes, my name is Micah Early. I graduated from GW with my master's in public health in 2017. I currently am doing some really interesting work as contracting and consulting with the Department of Health and Human Services. The work that I'm doing really focuses around both terrorist threats as well as natural disasters, so under the umbrella of emergency preparedness and emergency management. A lot of the work that I'm touching on, it's some of it is like high level and classified, but others is just like, it's more so just like really touching on the public health portion of my life that I've always really wanted to focus on. And it's one of the best places to do it at HHS.
I didn't know you were doing classified stuff now.
It depends on the project.
Are we all in jeopardy now because we're in the studio with you?
I'm pretty sure you're not implicated in
pretty
anything
sure.
just by knowing.
Pretty sure, but not certain. Okay, so if this is the last episode, that
exactly,
then you know that that's the problem. And it was Micah's fault. So that's the blame. See, I'm going to blame you for something.
Yeah, now I understand.
And now you know what.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
So that's your blame. Greg's blame is going to be, and thanks actually. This is a thankful blame. When we were doing this leadership course a few years back, Greg is a seasoned podcaster himself, and suggested to me, he said, you know, you should do a podcast. And I was like, yeah, right. Why would I do that? And he gave some pretty compelling reasons for doing it. And then sort of it stayed in my head as an idea. And then some opportunities came up and I took advantage of those. And here we are. So thank you for inspiring me to have done this, even if there's only 10 people listening, including my mom, which is good.
I hope she likes it. I hope she likes this episode in particular.
So the thing, I'm not sure what to blame you for yet, Bhakti.
I'm sure it's coming.
So junctional thinking, we talk about sort of five different things. So it's all about sort of being a perpetual learner, being willing to listen to people from multiple sort of sectors and places, not being afraid of leadership positions or leadership opportunities. And then the last two are practicing patience or figuring out how to do that effectively and partnering, right? Being able to partner most effectively with people. I think that the things that really stick out to me are the listening part of things. Like, so who do you listen to? Why do you listen to those particular people? And as you think about your careers, now, Bhakti, you talked about having bounced around a fair bit. Greg, you haven't bounced around that much. And I think that, and you're out 2 years now, so
you're second, internships,
a little bit, right? So what is it an internal thing that you listen to that sort of says, okay, I'm going to move from place to place to place, and something else that says to you, Greg, no, I'm going to stick right here? What is it that with respect to that element of things, moving around? Because a question that I used to get a lot from your colleagues, and maybe not from each of you, is my resume, I don't want my resume to look like I've been to a whole bunch of different places and I don't have any attention span for one particular thing. How does it look for me to be in multiple places? So who have you listened to and how have you decided to either stay or move? So Bhakti.
Sure. So right after grad school, I was told by a mentor and professor of mine to consider a congressional fellowship. And the idea of that just scared me completely because I just didn't think that was what my path was going to be. I didn't think I wanted to be part of that world. And I went through the motions of it. And then I realized that it is important to take things on that perhaps make you uncomfortable. And it ended up being one of the greatest experiences of my professional career. And I learned a lot, not only content-wise, but also just about myself and how you respond in tense situations and how you kind of step up to the plate and make a contribution. You know, and then as I proceeded onwards from there, it was just about thinking about, you know, what other realm have I not seen yet? What other realm am I curious about and interested in contributing to? And a good piece of advice that I had gotten from someone was think of yourself as at the center of the circle in the healthcare field or in any field for that matter. And think about all the different stakeholders that kind of sit in that circumference and are looking at that center. And how do you understand the perspectives of all those people? And you don't necessarily have to be each of those people,
right?
But you have to put yourself in a place that understands that perspective and kind of walks in their shoes. And I think that makes you a more powerful contributor. So, you know, now I've been at my current role for almost 2.5 years. So nice. When I say bounced around, it's not been that much. But right. I think even within that, any job you take, you kind of have to, like, keep your eyes open and keep learning.
Okay.
So that's what I've listened to.
So to flip that on its head, Greg, you may have been at one place doing work, but you do other work as well. So talk to us a bit about, though, the being at the one place that's your primary, and then how you satisfy the other areas of your inquisitive mind.
Sure. So I think both Bhakti and I sort of oversimplified our career paths, that she bounced around a lot and I didn't. I think that there's a little bit more nuance with both of our stories. I started actually working for the National Center for Education Statistics as a contractor, and found that to be okay, but not really where my passion was.
Okay.
And then I got into GW and started working first as a clinical trial coordinator for the Diabetes Prevention Program Outcome Study. And I did that for about 2 years. And then I got laid off. And that, I think, was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because I got on at the Department of Health Policy and Management at GW and really found my niche.
Okay.
I think that my trajectory has been a little bit less intentional and a little bit more luck-oriented. But I think, I say this a lot, that I think that to a certain extent we make our own luck, and that we need to be open and receptive to the opportunities that arise. And so
right.
getting laid off and then finding that opportunity at the Department of Health Policy and Management, and then finding this career path that I really like and I can see myself growing in and have grown in for a considerable amount of time, has been very lucky, but something that I was capable of doing because I was open to it.
Did you like the clinical trial stuff?
No, I mean, it was more biostatistics oriented.
Okay.
And I think that I'm more of a less of a numbers person and more of a policy communications
okay.
oriented
so,
person.
You did that for a couple of years because it was there.
Right. It was there. And also, you know, it provided an opportunity for me to go to graduate school at George Washington
yes.
University
yeah,
and
yeah.
get my master's in public health, which
yeah.
I ultimately landed on a concentration in health policy.
Right.
And I told people this, oh, I don't know what I'm going to, you know, have a concentration in for my master's in health policy. And then when I finally, my master's in public health, and when I finally picked health policy, people were like, how did you not know that? That about yourself? Of course, that's what you're supposed
right.
to do.
Okay. Okay. Good. Good. Micah, how about for you?
I mean, I think just my trajectory so far, like you said, I'm only like 2 years out, but I think that I've had a good amount of experience just from when I started in 2015 all the way until now, as it relates to like, it's been a little bit of luck, blessings, and then also just a little bit of like a lot of stick-to-itiveness.
Right.
When I first got to GW, I told myself I want to be able to have experience in all the sectors of public health. So my first internship was with a nonprofit. I was there for about a year, two semesters. I didn't have the summer. Then the next internship was more so also at a nonprofit, but a slightly different work. So the first internship was at ASTHO, Association of State and Territorial Health Officials.
Right.
I was doing a lot of health promotion and disease prevention, a little bit of policy work, but just a lot of different things, you know, in terms of just giving every possible topic. And then from there, I moved on to the Truth Initiative. And that's what I really, like, I felt that I was really in my wheelhouse because I had a specific connection to tobacco, just in terms of, like, my own family history and whatnot.
Right.
So that really like made me, it encouraged me a lot to just keep moving forward in my public health journey. From there, I went and I interned with the federal government, which was my first real like dive into how the government works and the speed that it works at, and like all the different channels that you have to use to get things done. And then afterwards, I went and interned in the private sector as at the Rabin Group, where I was touching on a lot of different things, whether it be Medicaid and SNAP, or whether it be even musician royalties. Like, I was touching on everything.
And, oh, wow.
Just music has a really big impact on my life, so it was really just great to touch on that. But I say all that to say, then I went and worked for American Academy of Pediatrics for a year and did a lot of child welfare and health policy work. But the luck and blessings portion of it comes into when, at the end of my time, nearing the time of my, I was on a grant with the American Academy of Pediatrics, so moving forward, I knew the grant was going to dry up soon. It was going to end. And I was all right, cool. I'm looking for a job. And then all of a sudden, just like by shooting my shot and applying everywhere, I was really able to find a spot that was best for me in emergency preparedness. But it was so interesting to me because when I was an undergrad as a global health major, I had always been trying to work with the Los Angeles County Department of Emergency Preparedness.
So it all came back around.
So I think that a part of my journey has just been like sticking to what I want to do and finding out what I want to do and trying everything. But then another part of it is just like being open to all opportunities I can find.
Right, right, right. And that seems to be the thing that I'm hearing from all of you is that you listened to the experiences you were having in particular places, and some of them were experiences that had nothing to do with the job, i.e. the job ended, mm-hmm. right? You got let go, whatever it was that happened. But took that, and wherever you landed next, used that as a pivot point to learn some more about what you did or didn't like. I think you all ended up doing things that you like doing to some extent because you also know what you don't like doing,
exactly.
Right? And you paid attention to that. So the things that I sort of pull out, and I appreciate Greg mentioning sort of the luck or serendipity piece of things, but I think that something that's very important is the notion that we're not always going to feel comfortable at the place where someone suggests that we go, right?
Yeah.
So the people who are telling us to listen to me, I'm suggesting that you should go try this thing,
yeah.
suggesting that you try that for a particular reason, you may not see the wisdom in it at the time, and you may hate the time you're doing it, but it's actually teaching you something, right? So there's some learning in that. You're listening to Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. This is the Junctional Thinking Podcast with your host, Pierre Vigilance, and I'm joined today by Bhakti Sehgal, Greg Dwyer, and Micah Early, and we've been talking a bit about, you know, career paths, but typically you talk about sort of what do you do, there's that box of what you do, right? So now I wanted to sort of get outside the box, and Micah, you just mentioned music being something that's always been a big influencer and driver. So we talk about things that you're passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
Do you make any or draw any connections between the things that you're passionate about outside of work and your work at all? And let me give you an example. I had a guest here who said to me, the only way that she knew how to fail effectively was because she was a music major, and if she kept sticking at the point where she was messing up on a piece of music as she was playing it, if she stopped there every time, she would never get to the second sheet.
Huh.
So she had to start going through that mistake, flip the page, and then when she came back to play the whole piece again, try to get through that mistake. But keep going through, and you're going to make some mistakes, but keep flipping the page and come back. And so there was that very interesting sort of alignment between how she approaches her career and how she approached playing music.
Okay.
That's what inspired me to ask you a bit about the music piece for you. I don't know what it is for you. And then for you too, as Greg and Bhakti.
Definitely. So, I mean, I think that in my current position, I don't know how I'm able to use music directly to better myself in terms of like my actual position right now, my job. But I will say that indirectly, music has always been tied to like culture. And
right.
I've always had a really strong passion for history.
Good.
So that desire to like, that joy of like learning more about history and cultures and whatnot has really therefore allowed me to have a passion for like vulnerable populations, just because like if you know the backstory of what people are going through, you're able to connect with them more, and you're able to really like dive into how you can help them and how you can improve their situation.
Gotcha.
So I think that that's why I was drawn so much to emergency preparedness, because oftentimes when these large scale disasters are happening, you have a lot of people that are like of all different walks of life that are just like terrified, they're worried, they're not really able to do what needs to be done in order to take care of their family and like those around them. But within that population of terrified people, there's even more vulnerable people.
Right.
Whether it be communities of color or socioeconomically disenfranchised people or just children. Like all of these different populations with all these subpopulations are really influenced by the impact of a large scale disaster. So I think that just desire for culture and history has really allowed for me to really embrace the work that I'm doing and always stay focused on, I know that I'm doing something good for people, and that just keeps me like that just allows me to get up in the morning and keep going.
Keeps you grounded in that. Okay. Greg, I know you've done some very interesting work outside of the office.
Yes.
Engaging populations and stuff like that. Is that sort of your Is that your outside the box sort of passion thing, that's, or is there something else that's completely unrelated to those projects?
I think it's a combination of the two. I think what you're specifically referring to is the work that the Metro DC Democratic Socialists of America do, right, specifically regarding the Stomp Out Slumlords campaign,
right,
where we go to people's houses who have been evicted and tell them what rights they have,
right,
as DC residents. And in fact, there are a number of protections that are existent in DC for people who have been evicted, and a lot of people aren't aware of them. So we do a canvas and go and tell people what it is that they can look for in terms of assistance in, you know, getting or keeping their houses. And then in addition to that, there's also the migrant justice campaign that we do, which is essentially shedding light on people that are profiteering off of the deportation industrial complex in this country, whether they be private prison CEOs or what have you, people that, you know, the outgoing director of ICE last year, we went to his house, and just shedding light on people and the things that they do in the shadows, and really drawing attention to the fact that they are profiting off of people's really serious refugee needs. And I think that I have an opportunity to tie that back in with the work that I do in the Department of Health Policy and Management, because we do a lot of work in housing and you know, assuring that, for instance, rental units, what sorts of mechanisms cities have in place to ensure that there's not asthma triggers or lead triggers in the home. And then we also, you know, do a lot. There's this public charge thing that's going on right now that the federal government is trying to do, where, you know, immigrants that are using social services are sort of penalized for that. And we've written a lot of regulatory comments for other organizations that we contract with in order to speak out about how, well, we don't think that this is a just thing. So I think that there is a lot of opportunity, both inside and outside of work, to kind of blend the things that I am really interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. Bhakti, how about for you?
So I love the example that you shared of your previous guest about music. I think my life outside of work has helped me personally and professionally in two ways. One, a sense of grit and a sense of creativity. And I think those are two really important things. And I think my most recent position and place of work has required me to tap into those wells within myself and cultivate those. So, you know, I grew up playing tennis, tennis player. I used to do singles. Nice. And it's such a mental game, right? Mm-hmm. Like point to point, you either kill it or you have a really good shot, and then, but then you miss it, and then you still have to go back to the baseline and serve again. And even if you're losing the set, you just have to keep on going. And I think that's something I feel really good about, that I had the mental kind of capacity to just kind of keep going back to the plate, no matter how miserable it may have made me. And then, you know, having people at the sidelines who are there for you. So I know, you know, Pierre and I used to talk a lot when I was going through some things about just kind of keeping my head in the game and staying focused and figuring out at what point do I stay in the game, what point do I stay out. So that's the personal side of things. But on the kind of creativity side of things, I've just really loved all activities around collaborative thinking. And so, you know, about a year and a half ago, I attended some classes, just sat in on them at GW that you were leading, Pierre, about design thinking and just different approaches to problems. And I know we talk about it a lot in the context of healthcare, but some little like weird and amazing thing that stepped out of that was around using design thinking for political organizing. And that's something I've kind of just happened upon. A few folks reached out to me asking if I would help them collaborate, brainstorm the best way to work together on a particular issue they were having across organizations. And that's just kind of turned into a thing. I've done it for a number of groups now. And I think just sitting in a room and kind of leading a conversation and getting people to do design sprints and brainstorming and just thinking nimbly on their feet is something that I've taken to my workplace and done a lot there. And it's amazing because initially I got a little bit of pushback, but now those ideas are spreading and other departments are interested in them. And I've presented on them in staff meetings. And, you know, I'm going to Stanford this winter for a course that my employer is sponsoring me for.
Excellent.
And so I think, you know, that outside piece really came together with what I was dealing with in my workplace and how I could be a better contributor, a more unique creative contributor.
Good. This is excellent. I think that there's just so many different pieces to dig into there. We're going to take a quick break, though. You've been listening to Junctional Thinking on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. And we'll be back in a couple minutes to talk a little bit about leadership and what makes it so damn scary. To Junctional Thinking, the podcast on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Today, I am joined by three colleagues who basically we sort of interacted with each other since, I guess, what, 2000, go back maybe now to 2014, 15 maybe, up to now, and they still speak to me, which is which is very, very gracious of them. They are Micah Early, Greg Dwyer, and Bhakti Sehgal. And we were talking about a few different things, but the thing I wanted to get into in this sort of next section was leadership and what makes it so scary. But before we get in there, and this is something actually that's come up in a couple of different conversations, part of the reason why people don't necessarily love doing a particular job, and it's interesting, you can have somebody who loves their job today and then the management structure around them changes slightly, and the same work all of a sudden becomes very, feels very different to them, right? And some of this is a function of the culture that is created or cultivated by the people who are in and around you at the office. They could be coworkers, they could certainly be bosses, etc. And I think we all have a sense for ourselves of what we like and what we don't like with respect to the people who manage us and who work with us. And the question I want to ask eventually is sort of what makes leadership so scary, or does leadership sound scary to you? But the question I want to ask before that is, in your mind, what have been some of the best ways you have learned how to manage up, right? This notion of being able to speak to the people who supervise you about various elements of what they do. I don't know if anyone sort of wants to jump in there with respect to like, yeah, I've got this example of a time when X, or if no one wants to talk about it, because you all mentioned where you worked, and so maybe that will be a reason why you won't say anything about this.
I'm happy to give
Here we go. Oh, rough goals. Okay, from no specific location.
Yes, okay. Exactly. I think, you know, I will say, I think the managing up is different when you have a fresh start with somebody, right? When you walk into a scenario either with a new boss or you're a new employee, I think it's been helpful, and it's something I've started doing, is just really having a conversation with them about my values. So just almost offering them a little bit more information than maybe that they would think to need when getting to know me, but just talking about what's really important to me, my communication style, the way I like to get feedback, all those really important kind of personality things which tend to sour management relationships over time. I just try to get ahead of them.
But how do you bring that up? Because if you've just walked into someone's office and said, hey, I know you just got here, boss X. I just wanted to tell you a few things about what I like, about how I'd like for you to communicate with me. And here's my... You see what I'm saying? Like, how do you... So how and when do you have that conversation?
Two strategies. One, take them for coffee. Or secondly, just tell them, I would like to have a conversation with you just to better get to know you as we work together. When can I do that? Can I put some time down on your calendar? Then, you know, just assessing, like, are they a 15-minute person or a one-hour person? And then how do you kind of fit into that, what the most important pieces are? But with regards to managing up, I think just continuing to keep that lane of conversation open is really important, because if you just kind of become complacent after a certain time and stop letting them know that you're paying attention, it can be difficult. It also builds trust, which I think is important for dealing with conflict or difficult situations.
So setting the stage early.
Yeah,
something
for sure.
That you, coffee, unspiked coffee, by the way.
Yes.
So no rum or
exactly.
brandy in the
Only
coffee.
If they choose to.
What depends? Oh, okay. It depends. Okay, here we go. You know, find out what happens over at Milken. I don't know. Yeah. So, yeah, any thoughts from either of you?
I think that as it relates to managing up, it depends on who your manager is and how they manage. I was actually speaking with you before the podcast in terms of just, like, the type of managerial style that I like as opposed to the type of managerial style that I'm currently receiving. And while they're not necessarily, one's not negative, one's not positive, I just know what works best for me. So.
Right.
I think that how I manage up is more so because, like, being relatively new in my job, I have to, like, you know, tiptoe a little bit. But I go out of my way to ask certain questions, whether it be, like, we'll have a meeting. And I actually appreciate meetings. I know a lot of people don't like meetings, but I actually like them when they're fruitful. And oftentimes at this new position, they are. But it's asking, okay, when do you need this by? Because I know that I need deadlines. So just asking that question puts it on their mind. Oh, well, I actually hadn't thought about when I needed this by. But now that you mention it, this date, boom, solves my problem and gives me something to work towards, which I really appreciate.
Right.
Other questions are more so just, it's like a lot like what Bhakti was saying in terms of, like, just that open lane of communication. Like, always being willing to meet and always asking, is there anything else? Because a lot of times, like, the hustle and bustle of life, you forget, like, oh, I had something for you, but I can't remember it right now. And then 10 minutes later, they forget. But if you can just ask them at the end of the meeting, hey, is there anything else that I could, like, work on or anything like that? That allows for that open communication to be there, lets them know that, hey, you're here for them. But also, it allows you to remind them, I actually needed this from you, and could you get back on it?
Right.
In a polite, you know, walking on eggshells, appropriate way. That's a better way to say it. But, that's just my current situation. Like, that's what I'm trying to put into practice.
Okay, good. Okay, Greg, besides spiking the coffee, what's...
It's interesting because I have essentially two managers with very different management styles. So that can be a little bit tricky to navigate sometimes. But what I've found that works for both of them is to be like very direct, like Michael was saying, about what the expectations are, about some sort of deliverable to them. And then also reminding them what they asked me to do. We have a lot of different projects. And I think that a lot of times when there are so many plates in the air, managers might forget why you did something a certain way. It's because you asked me to do it like this. And so to really keep that line of communication open, to say, this is what I did, as we spoke about previously, really kind of emphasizing that open line of communication is, I think, very important for avoiding perhaps fire drills down the road where you deliver something to a manager and it's totally different than what they were expecting, and then you have to put in several late nights in order to fix it.
To fix it, no one likes that. So let me flip this around. You know, they say do unto others, as you would have them do unto you. So if you, when each of you are in the position of being the person to whom others are reporting, do you envision yourselves as being able to do the things that you're asking your managers to do? Or are those things going to be like, don't ask me for deadlines. I'm telling you. I'll tell you when I tell you, Micah. Don't ask me for deadlines. Or, I'm asking you to do this differently than this other thing, even though I said something else yesterday. And sort of inconsistency, to your point, Greg. So, do you see yourselves as being able to do those things? Are those achievable objectives for you as managers? Or do you think that there may be some learning you have to do in order to be able to do that?
I always seek clarity, like that's the only thing. Don't hand walk me through exactly what you want me to do, but give me the right parameters. Like you said, Micah. So but if asking your boss to articulate what they want is a problem, that's a problem. So as a manager, I hope that in the process of articulating to somebody, I would get some clarity, and actually it's a thought exercise, of like, how can we, maybe something else crosses your mind that you would like in that project. So I think asking to that level is really feasible. I think I hope to one day be like the Croc shoe manager rather than a Danish clog.
Could you explain that?
So what I mean is, like, Crocs are ugly, not really fashionable, but there's a lot of their structure, flexible structure, and lots of airflow.
Okay.
AKA communication.
Versus the
Danish clog, which is wooden and not very comfortable and only one way in and one way out. And I feel like people just don't respond to that. And I've been in situations like that before. And it just isn't good for anybody.
But the croc isn't sustainable. It's rubber and it wears out. Whereas the Danish clog, I could put a cork insole in it and some other stuff maybe, and make it, and some thick socks.
Yeah.
So how do you?
You have to take care of your croc. Self care and
take
outside.
Is that the takeaway from today? So take care of your croc. Okay. Great. All right.
That's the title of the podcast.
But how do you guys see this as working? I mean, sort of that, and that's a great perspective. You know, clarity is what you want, so it should be what you give.
It's interesting because you talked about when you do, or if you do eventually get into this sort of managerial role. And I feel like right now I'm starting to cross over into the more managerial role, particularly over the past year or so. I'm in almost like a kind of liminal space where I'm working with people who I'm like only a couple years older than, only have a couple years more experience than, and I'm being asked to manage projects, and I feel like there is a tendency, especially particularly in policy writing, where if you're a good writer, eventually you can't do any more writing. You can't progress anymore. And then you just have to manage people writing. And I think those are two very different skill sets. And I think that it comes naturally to some people. And I think that for people like me, maybe not so much. We're talking about managing up. In my kind of more managerial role that I've been taking on over the past year or so, I have a new coworker who's a PhD student who is excellent at managing up me. So So I look at her and I see the things that she's doing about like how can I help, and really asking me these very pointed questions like we've been talking about, and really trying to emulate that with my own managers. Good. Who are also her managers.
Good.
And so it's good to have an example of managing up. And I also want to be clear, my managers are very good at managing funder expectations. They manage up in that.
It's a whole other thing. Yeah. Yes, definitely, with respect to the dollars. Micah, a quick response to that?
Yeah, I think that as it relates to just if I was in that position, would I be able to do it?
When you're in that position,
true. When I'm in that position, I think that deadlines are pretty objective. Like, if I'm asking for them, I'll definitely be able to give them out because I know that I work best in that way.
Right.
But I can also, going back to your croc analogy, like that flexibility and that airflow is very crucial because I understand that I think a certain type of way and other people might not. So
gotcha.
If you think in a more fluid way, I can definitely try to work with you to like still get us to the finish line, but at the same time, allowing for you to breathe and move in a certain way. Going back to like just going from being a great writer to managing writers, that's a difficulty in terms of like you know how you want to write,
right?
But I also, even when I'm proofreading like people's information now, it's just like, you know, hey, I know I'm trying to let you keep your voice, and I know that,
right?
Yeah, so I'm just trying to let you keep your voice, but also like
some flexibility, definitely a lot of attention to being clear,
mm-hmm.
being unto others as you want them to be unto you, sort of like honoring that.
Exactly.
I hear you all talk about listening very effectively. I also hear you all being very appreciative and being respectful of the stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
The stories in the work, the stories outside of the work. And hopefully what listeners have received from listening to all of you is that even if the lines aren't necessarily always straight from one job to the next, and if some of them are sort of broken up by periods of inactivity because of jobs being moved on from, lost, school starting, stopping, et cetera, there's opportunities for learning in all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And paying attention to that and being aware of it for ourselves translates over into how aware we are of that as we work. And the people that we work with and the people that we work for, be that clients, managers, whoever it is. So as we come to a close, I just want to say that I appreciate always being able to listen to all of you, and listening to you as you go through your journeys is fascinating to me and also very humbling to sort of watch you go through it. And so I appreciate you for that. You've been listening to Full Service Radio on the... I've been good so far. Alexia's looking at me like, I don't know what you're doing right now. Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. This is the Junctional Thinking Podcast. Our guests today, Bhakti Sehgal, Greg Dwyer, Micah Early, thank you very much for being here. I'm your host, Pierre Vigilance, and we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.